This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, so thank you and welcome to IDN Guidelines Working Group meeting on 16th of June 2016. We have Edmund, Matt, Dennis, Carl, and Sarmad online. Over to you, Edmund. I'm syncing the document, so we have control.
Thank you, Sarmad. And while you dropped off earlier, we kind of agreed that, that Matt will help coordinate the call today. So okay. I guess the Matt.
Yeah. We have two major additions today, I think, and I think we should start with the variance part and discuss the contribution from Edmund there. Edmund, can you go through and share us your thoughts and how you thought about that idea?
Certainly. Thank you, Matt. This is Edmund. Well, last time when we talked about that particular section, there was a list of, for example, ownership, automatic activation, and a number of things. And I volunteered to put a thought towards all the issues surrounding the topic. That's the document I sent a few hours ago. Really just a bunch of questions to get us started on discussing whether certain things should be in the implementation guidelines or not. And I have roughly separated into allocation, delegation, child hosts, and name servers, and then who is in registration data. And then I had one point on DNSSEC as well, and then left it open. It's still, you know, a rough collection, and hoping to spark more thoughts on, you know, all the things that surround this that may or may not need to be added into the guidelines. And that's the starting point. I'll stop here and see if people think that, you know, that's kind of the right direction. And then go back to maybe, you know, go through them one by one.
Yeah. So I see it that two possibilities. One is that the guidance kind of stipulates one way or the other how things should be done. And another possibility is that the guidance describes the various possibilities for allocation, etc. And I don't think that the guidelines could stipulate, because this is something which will be regulated by the registry agreement, ICANN and the GTLD. But it's good to cover the various possibilities so that a TLD can think of this and have something to base their decision on how to go forward.
Ms. Edmund, thank you, Matt. But some of the things we might, you know, want to have a sort of a stronger position on, like the, you know, the first one, the what I call atomicity, but whether, you know, it is the whole package, the idea, the primary IDN and all the IDN variants from it is considered one domain registration, or can it be split up into different packages? This is a very fundamental thing, and we might want to put some weight behind it. Another one is, for example, the LGR dispositions of allocatable and blocked. How do we consider How do we consider those in the policy? If someone decides to somehow delegate a blocked IDM variant, is that also is that something that we should speak about here? So I generally agree, and there are certainly quite a number of aspects where we could just point out a few options, and then these are things that you should consider. But there may be some of them that we should have a stronger recommendation on. That's my current thinking.
So in reality, if you look at the index, if we have variants, in most cases, they block the variants, or they make them allocatable for the same registrant. But there are cases where it's possible for a third party to register a variant if accepted by the original registrant. So that possibility is quite complex.
Good point. It's Edmund again. That's a very good point. Do you think that is something that's sustainable or good if we continue to think about LGRs and IDN variants defined this way and allow type of policy to even happen? And that has a lot of implications on dispute resolution as well. We're jumping right into the part of the discussion. What if a dispute is brought upon one of the IDN variants? What happens then? I'm not sure. I'll posit this. I actually think it may be a better, sorry for stuttering and coming back and forth. Okay. Let's be more straightforward. I'd like to try to see if we may have agreement to say that we should keep the atomicity and say the IDN primary and the IDN variants are always packaged in one and not, it cannot be given to another registrant. Or else it's really not an IDN variant at that point.
This is Cal. I wonder if there's a compromise where we can identify these scenarios, these best practice scenarios and scenarios which divert from best practice. So, for example, one where you would allow a second registrant to register or to possess somehow a variant, and we identify the pitfalls of doing that and recommend that you somehow must support that alternative scenario through policy or mechanical means. There's a similar suggestion, I guess, for DNS, where you can only really allow key data. You can't allow DS data, which is the most common form, if you're allowing the allocation of domain names. So again, you'd recommend that you enable key data, and if someone chooses to do otherwise, then they will need to come up with a solution for that. So we state what we consider best practice, and where someone diverges, they need to somehow mitigate that. We might not suggest how to mitigate, but the implementer needs to consider that. That's just a thought, anyway.
I definitely think that the best practice is to keep the variants with one resistance, because that is less risky for further effects when the domain names may be used by others. So I think that's the best practice. I'm not sure that we should say that it's forbidden to have the other variant, the other solution, the other policy.
This is Edwin. I think it's probably fine to go ahead with this direction. But I guess we do have a at least some consensus that we should include the description about this in this guideline.
Yes, I think that we should describe the different possibilities.
So this is Ahmad. Just a quick comment on it. So if we define it as a best practice, obviously it does not become contractually binding. Therefore, obviously, TLDs may diverge from it.
If I can accept that, because it's regulated in the contract.
Right, but I think what we're saying is that we are not recommending it, but actually going to describe it as, I guess, something different from a recommendation. In that case, it does not become contextually binding to the guidelines. I think that is okay if that's what the group thinks. Is the best strategy going forward. But I think in that case, it may be useful to include in the guidelines or this best practice guidelines on, can or should TLD arbitrarily diverge from this rule, or there should only be certain conditions where it is the TLD should consider diverging from this particular best practice, rather than leaving that up to the TLD to decide, because, as I said, in that case, the TLD may just arbitrarily diverge from it. Unless we would like the TLD to, if we think it's okay for the TLD to decide at the current levels for it.
Edmund.
Yeah. I'm conscious of the and first of all, yes, I am supportive of what Samad said, and of course I'm a little bit biased. I think this needs to be more strongly put forward. That also, and part of the motivation is the concern from a registry operator standpoint that if we don't have a strong policy on this, then let's say a dispute is being brought on one of the IDN variants, and the court, whatever says you have to split it up, or, some dispute, well, court is not a good example. Some dispute result comes to say you got to split it up. At least we have a defense to say, hey, wait a minute. All we can do is deprecate the domain, not allow it to resolve, but we're not going to, by this, policy, we cannot, just take it away and give it to them. The problem is, if some registry decides that the whole technical solution and everything, it is atomic, and that is being required, I'm I'm very worried that eventually, you know, that they may be forced to implement something ad hoc that actually breaks much more stuff than was intended to. This is a particular point that I think, you know, we could be stronger on here if possible.
So, Edmund, do you think that we should say that variants should be kept as one unit, or must be kept as one unit?
I'd like to go with must, but you know, a strong should would, you know, I'd still like to push for must. Is my point, I guess.
Is anyone opposing a must? Is anyone opposing a should?
This is Keller. I think I'd prefer a should. It's certainly the right approach generally. If someone were to ask me how to introduce a TLD, it's what I'd recommend. I don't think I want to mark it as a must, though.
Dennis?
Yes, I'm on the same boat as Carl. And right now, just agreeing or not agreeing to just what we are saying, it's a little bit hard to process. So I think this is great what Edmund has put together. I would like to have some time with for myself and my team to review all these recommendations or use cases, if you will, and I like to see what the actual recommendations is looking like so that we can assess whether where should I go. I mean, in principle, yes, I like to see that variants are activated to the same registrant, but there are implications to that, and like we talk about court orders, how do transfers will behave. So as far as I know, transfers are a individual transaction. So what if a registrar initiates a transfer on one and not the other variant in the block? I mean, so we have to think through all these use cases when it comes to managing a group of domain names as a single unit.
Yes, I think we also need to probably bring into discussion the adverse effect of on usability if the variant atomicity is broken, and also extent that if different variants are actually allocated to different people. You know, it just does not break usability, or may have adverse impact on usability. It actually can eventually cause security problems like phishing. So I think that's something that should be considered in this discussion as well. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reply to Dennis, I think that most or maybe all registries that support activated variants, that they register them as a block, as one unit, so that you cannot do something, you cannot release just one or move or migrate one. You have to keep them as one unit, just because they are considered to be a unit. That's the most common solution, I think. So it looks like we could agree that we should state that if variants can be activated, then they should be kept as one unit and activated with one and the same registrant. Have I understood you correctly?
This is Edmund just jumping in. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I wonder if we want to, rather than jump right into detailed discussion, there is a few points on allocation that I think are interrelated. So, I can walk it through quickly and then come back to see if there's any further discussion related to what you said as well.
Yeah. Please walk us through and stop and ask questions, or we break in when we want to say something.
Okay. Thank you. So the idea for allocation is actually mapping back to the original wording in 2.5, which says ownership. I'm avoiding the word ownership for different purposes. There's some controversy on whether you own a domain name. So traditionally we've used allocation as allocating to the registrant, and then delegation as putting it into the DNS. So the whole section of allocation is a kind of about ownership, although I'm avoiding the word in the written form. A few items besides the atomicity, I'm calling it atomicity, we should probably find better words for those, is when the LGR disposition says blocked, what happens to the actual allocation? Does the guy still own that? Does the registrant still own that name, or is it blocked by the registry? And the resulting problem is, let's say there's a blocked IDN variant, and somebody wants to bring a dispute on it. Do they bring the dispute on the registry, or do they bring the dispute on the registrant? But if the registrant is not even allocated that particular IDN variant, then he doesn't, he doesn't own it, or he doesn't, that's not part of what is allocated to him, then it's a very different situation. So you might want to need to think through whether blocked variants are actually considered allocated to the registrant. I don't know how much we need to talk about that, but that is certainly an area that I have some thoughts around. And then we touched a little bit on the dispute whether you can separate it and give it to someone else. So right now the systems, I think most of the systems, at least all of the systems that I know of, don't do that. I'd like for us to keep it that way. So, but there's one particular aspect, which is whether blocked ones are considered allocated to the registrant. That also has some implications on other things as we go further down. But those are the few items on allocation.
May I jump in? I think that we should look at three different possibilities. We have blocked, which cannot be allocated, so they are just stopped from being used, and then allocatable, which are possible to allocate. I mean, there are variants, but they are not active. The registrant does not want to have it. And then allocated, which is something which is used. So when it's allocated, the registrant has decided, I want to use that variant. And when it comes to dispute, I cannot see that if it's blocked or if it's just allocatable, but not allocated. Anyone could dispute that name because it's not there. You don't use it. It's just theoretically usable. That's my point. A block variant, that could, let's say that you register a domain name in Cyrillic, and then that results domain names in Latin to be blocked. It doesn't have to be in the same script. Edwin.
I think Samar has his hand up as well, but just quickly on the point, I guess. Here we have also a little bit of a terminology situation. The LGR, as it was developed, was allocatable and blocked. In the traditional ICANN terminology, allocate is more of the ownership, as I mentioned, and delegation was the to the DNS. There's a slight confusion and conflation on the issue when we match it with LGR. But I think, you know, in general, that's the actual thing is what we're talking about here is the ownership, and then on the delegation part, that's what's in the DNS. And yes, I think we should be strong about, based on the LGR, if its position is allocatable, that's the only one that can be delegated. Which is what is mean by allocated in the LGR terminology.
Samad?
Thanks, Max. I think I was one of the things I was going to say is what Edmund just said, that this terminology, the way it's used for the top level, and I think we should probably try to keep it consistent at the second level as well, is basically that when a label variant check is created, it may contain two types or two dispositions. A label may be blocked or allocatable. I think at this level there is no ownership. When it is allocated, that's when the quote unquote ownership comes in. So if one thinks about it in that way, then blocked actually doesn't have any ownership because that's the same block and allocatable are at the same level where the allocate ownership is not really defined. Once a subset of allocatable variants are allocated, that's when the ownership comes in. So ownership is, interestingly, probably not even relevant for allocatable variants in addition to block variants which are not allocated. And that's something which we need to discuss. Probably has implications on disputes, for example. But that's where we are at this time. The second thing which I think I want to bring into this discussion, because that's probably relevant, is that there are certain labels which are not made available by the registry. We could call them reserved labels. If somebody brings a dispute against the reserved label, what would happen? And shouldn't there be a similar kind of policy for allocatable but not allocated and blocked labels as there is for those kind of labels which I reserved. Thank you.
Carl?
I just want to make the point that it may not make much of a difference when we're talking about allocation considerations, but it will later. With a label that contains variants, a registry might have domains which can be activated by the registrant, but it might also have additional variants which can never be activated by the registrant. And there might be different reasons for that. One of them is that you place a limit on the absolute number of variants that a registrant can activate. In the case of, say, Arabic, you can end up with thousands of variants. So you wouldn't want all of those in the zone file if a particularly malicious registrant wanted to register that label. So, and that list might actually change over time. A registrant might deactivate a domain name and activate a new variant. So the ownership of that, the ownership of a variant should pretty much only ever be traced through its canonical form to the original registered domain name, and every other variant or the ownership perception should be understood to be transient and only applicable based on the canonical connection. Like I said, it's probably not a big deal for this section where we're talking about allocation, because a dispute's always going to end up with the owner of the canonical or canonically matched domain name. It would be bizarre for a registry to allow a dispute to be made against a variant that doesn't actually have an owner, but later on it might be an issue. So I think that's probably where we should draw the distinction, that a domain name with a registrant is or should always be the target of a dispute. And I guess that would also apply to a reserve name as well. I'm struggling to understand why a dispute could ever be brought against a reserve name other than someone wants to register it and they're not allowed to. You certainly couldn't suggest malicious registration or malicious use, and it wouldn't impinge any trademarks, because it's not, it doesn't exist. It's simply blocked at the registry. And if you're suggesting that you're entitled to its use, that's a little bit different to trying to argue that one would hope that all the canonical form, or that the canonical form of that domain name is also reserved, and therefore no variants would be in existence. So again, you'd be disputing it with the single, in this case, manager of that domain name, which would be the registry. They wouldn't be the owner unless the registry registered it as a form of reservation, but the distinction wouldn't be that relevant.
Edmund?
Thank you, Mats. And I think, Cal, you're hitting onto the issue that concerns me, and that's the situation where if we have some variants that we consider blocked or reserved and not owned by a registrant, we end up with a situation where the dispute could be brought to the registry. And in terms of malicious potential, abusive registration, let's say I can totally imagine a way to do a kind of a cyber squatting, say that I registered a particular primary IDN, which I know that a trademark is in the blocked list. And I just sit there, then the trademark guys need to pay me to drop the name and then they can get it in the right form. In that case, then that's kind of the possibility that I see, which I wonder if we need to, for a second level, I understand for a top level, as Samad explained, anything that's reserved or blocked or not even delegated into the answer really is not operated by the registry operator. But second level domains are a little bit different, and this and the set of variants, this is one of the issues that we need to think through, and we might want to think through at least if ultimately we stay silent on the issue, at least we've thought through the potential implications, and that's why I kind of threw it up.
This is Cal. Just to follow up on that, my recommendation or what I would suggest that we write is that we highlight that possible scenario, and we strongly recommend that registries include variant or language in their dispute resolution policies that that acknowledge that a domain name or variant based on its canonical form can be applicable in any dispute, so that a domain name owner is, or the terms of use of domain name, the acceptable use, the URS, for example, where you're judged for the purpose of registration and the use of under a particular class of goods or so on. So all of those degrees should be honoured for all permutations of your domain name. And bearing in mind that we're talking about variants and not similar or similes or things like that, I think that's it's a reasonably clear recommendation, and it would empower the registry operators to just make sure that their acceptable use and their registrant agreements would support that kind of or a protection against that sort of behaviour, so that if you do get the squatting that you're concerned about, the registrant is held to the same standard as if they had actually registered the variant in the first place, insofar as the type of use that they're putting the domain name to.
This is Edmund jumping in. That's a great suggestion. I think that's a nice way to put it. In fact, I support it strongly, and if this is something that we can actually recommend registry look into.
Well, I'm hesitating. Should a registrant really be responsible of variants not activated? I don't find that reasonable. Should that also include blocked variants? I don't find it.
I think the suggestion is that not that they're responsible, bearing in mind that a dispute is normally taken on the use of a name, not the non-use of a name. So you are responsible for the use of name, and if you're misusing that, for example, representing someone with a trademark, then simply having a single character different or and there's precedent in this in the Latin world anyway, where simple misspellings have not protected registrants from action in UDRP and URS. So what we would be suggesting is just a reminder for registry operators to ensure that their dispute resolution policies acknowledge that that the canonical form of the domain name needs to be respected in any dispute resolution action, that if a dispute is taken against the domain name that is a variant of a person's trademark, then simply being that, not being the exact match of that trademark, is not enough protection to shield the registrant from that disputation action. They're still held to account for their behaviour, and that behaviour would still have to be malicious. So we're not suggesting that they can't use variants, or that they are now have an additional scope of responsibility. They still have to carry out the act, which is somehow a bad faith.
But Carl, I'm not sure if I understand you correctly, but if you register a domain name which has no infringement on any trademark, but one of the variants of that domain name, allocatable variant of that domain name, may infringe on some trademark, but you don't activate that variant, could you still be in charge of a dispute resolution for that infringement?
Well, I think we wouldn't be dictating the dispute resolution. I would imagine that the advice we would place would be something along the lines of registry operators should consider variants in all dispute resolution policies, because for example a registry may have requirements for exact match of a trademark for a particular phase. In that case, use of the domain name is not particularly relevant, and the actual exact match string is. And I wouldn't want to tell the registry operator what to do in that case, simply to remind them that someone could try and game the system. But in the case of a traditional URS or UDRP, simply having an exact match against an existing trademark has never been has never constituted a crime. It's the misuse of that domain name. So, and that's all I would suggest that we put in the guidelines, that we remind people that if they are going to have misuse and bad faith policies, that they should apply those bad faith policies to all variants of a particular mark, or if a mark is actually required as
all variants to, or activated variants.
Well, actually, it should be to the canonical form of the domain name and the owner of that of the canonical form. So, if the canonical form contains variants that has that impinge on a trademark, and the owner of that domain name also satisfies any other bad faith element of a policy, then they should be then the policy should cover that scenario. And that's all we would recommend, is that the policy should cover the scenario where a bad faith behaviour occurs in a variant.
Edward?
The behaviour would still have to occur, is what I'm saying. You still have to do something bad. You're not liable simply for having accidentally registered a domain name that matches a trademark.
Yeah, Edmund here. So I guess just adding to what Cal said, there is also non-usage doesn't relieve you of an infringement in terms of the UDRP. Even if you mean the name, there's a bad faith on it, and there have been many cases of that. You know, just a cyber squatter registering domain, not using it, but still could be taken away because if there is, he has this track record of doing this, for example, and I think that's why it doesn't, in a variant case, then it's not just about the ones activated. I think that's the appropriate way to frame it, or else the registry takes on unreasonable liability to answer to these disputes, because you know this is a dispute, and somebody to take the name away, they would have to present enough evidence that the registrant is actually malicious and you know has registered the domain in bad faith in order to get that particular IDN variant, right? I mean that's not something we need to worry about. What we need to worry about is to say that you know this when you register a name, this is the whole set that has implication with the name, and you should know the policy before you register the name. That's and I think that's a reasonable standpoint for both ICANN registries, registrars, and the registration industry.
Mark, jumping in, that also requires that the registrant knows what the variants are actually allocatable or blocked for that domain name.
This Edmund, I guess as a registrant, this is something that you should know, right? I mean, and for registrars and registries, it is the registry and the registrar's responsibility to make sure that it is available and registrants can figure out what they are.
Yeah, it puts the requirement on the registrar to show that information. Yes, yeah. Yeah, please, who was trying to...
Sorry, that was... actually, it's interesting you mentioned the registrar because the TMCH works exactly that way. So during that period, if you are to register a domain name, whose variants might impinge, excuse me, a trademark in the TMCH, then you will get the warning that says, hey, in this class of goods, this string is a registered trademark, which, of course, doesn't prevent you from registering it. So if you're using it for a different class of goods or you've got a very different purpose for registering the domain name, you're still entitled to do so. And you can go ahead and do the registering. So in that case, you get the warning, just like with all domain names, after the TMCH is closed, I guess it's buyer beware. But again, the behaviour is of the registries will still be the key, and we're not going to dictate that to registry operators. We're just simply going to tell them that their dispute resolution policies need to be adapted to the likelihood that there will be variance to any trademark or dispute resolution policy that matches, that goes on a string-based evaluation.
Folks, it's 3 minutes to 2 o'clock, and we're supposed to, well, my time, to 12 UTC. So time is running up. Will we have a meeting at the ICANN meeting?
I think it does not seem possible to organize a face-to-face meeting.
Okay.
Especially because I'm not going to be there in person.
So next meeting will be in 2 weeks then, in the ICANN week. Edmund, Dennis, Carl, will you be at the ICANN meeting in Helsinki?
This is Edmund. Yes, I'm planning to be in Helsinki.
Dennis and Carl?
They responded in the chat box. They are not going to be there.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we should have a meeting in 2 weeks or if we should skip that meeting then.
Ms. Zedman jumping in, I guess then the question is, do we skip that and meet 4 weeks from now, or we meet like 3 weeks from now?
Last time we had that discussion, we came to the conclusion that it's better to skip than to change the schedule.
This is Carol. I was just going to say that if it's at all possible to meet during the ICANN meeting, during our regular time, that would be good. My impression is that we've developed a little bit of momentum over the last few months and weeks, and it would be a shame to pause that if at all possible. But I understand that ICANN can be very distracting for those of us in the community, so that's just a suggestion.
So should we keep the meeting as is?
Ms. Zedman jumping in. I don't have the final schedule in front of me. It is kind of midday, I'm guessing, in Finland, during a meeting, and it's hard to predict what the dynamics are, especially given this meeting, the format is a little bit different. I kind of concur with Tal that let's keep the momentum. I'll try to figure out what exactly is happening there and report, you know, just note back to the mailing list whether the regular time is possible for me.
It's 12 to 1 in Finland. Noon.
Right. So I don't know, Samad, if you have the schedule in front of you. I'm trying to find it right now, but I don't know what's scheduled at that particular time.
So I suggest that we keep the meeting in 2 weeks, but that we confirm in the mailing list if who's going to be available in 2 weeks. Thursday might be a travel day for people. Okay. Thank you very much for attending, and Samad, thank you very much for hosting the meeting. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.